Hello everyone, I'm Pengyu Zhang from the University of Massachusetts. Today, I will present a new network design for backscatter system, which enables the backscatter communication to operate in severe energy harvesting conditions. This is joint work with Deepak Ganesan. If you look at the technology trends in low power sensors, one interesting area is micropower sensors. These sensors are equipped with micro energy harvester. As a result, they don't have to use a battery to power the whole system. One application domain of this sensor is biosensing. For example, the sensors in the bloodstream to deliver the glucose, wearable sensors to measure the vital signs, and molecular sensors in the ear. And recently, Google announced a project of contact lens, which measures the glucose in your tears. Because of the physical size limitations of these tiny sensors, as a result, it's very hard to attach a big battery or even a coin cell battery onto these sensors. As a result, the designers are turning into the ambient or external energy sources to harvest energy and power the whole system. For example, they can harvest energy from the microsolar cells, vibration, thermal gradients, and wireless signal biofuels. The particular question we are interested to answer is, how do these sensors communicate with the outside world? For example, you might want to offload the glucose sensor data from the contact lens to a cloud infrastructure for further data analysis. Or you might want to send commands to the sensors to deliver the glucose, right? In recent years, there has been an emerging technology which called backscatter communication that is used for communicating with such tiny sensors. RFID infrastructure is one example of the backscatter communication system. In RFID infrastructure, there is a backscatter reader which continuously provides a carrier wave to the sensor. The sensor rectifies the carrier wave, convert it into energy, store the energy into the buffer, power the whole system. At the same time, the sensor reflects part of the energy back to the reader with its own information. Because the sensor does not actively transmit information like Wi-Fi system, it just reflects the signal back to the reader. As a result, the power consumption of backscatter communication is very, very low, at a microwatts level. It seems that the backscatter communication is suitable for communicating with such tiny sensors because this sensor does not have energy, right? But in reality, it's not true. This is because of the several limitations. One limitation is the communication range of the backscatter communication. In order to understand this, we did one experiment. We deploy one micropower sensor in front of the backscatter reader. We run a network stack, Dewdrop, which was published several years ago on SDI, and measures the maximal operating range of this sensor when it runs the Dewdrop network stack. And the maximal range we achieved is 3.6 feet. Okay, we might conclude 3.6 feet is the maximal communication distance of backscatter system. Just like we said for the Wi-Fi, that the Wi-Fi does not work beyond 30 feet. However, when we make the conclusion, we should be a bit careful because the backscatter have two parts of the story. The first part is the backscatter reader provides the RF power to operate the sensor. The second part is it enables the wireless communication with the sensor. Which one is the bottleneck? Is it 3.6 feet caused by the RF harvesting, or caused by the failed wireless communication? In order to understand this, we did one experiment. We transmit the raw data from the sensor directly to the backscatter reader and measure the maximum communication distance we can achieve. And it turns out the maximum communication distance we achieved is 18.6 feet, much longer than the 3.6 feet. So there's a huge gap, right? It's five times longer. It's a huge gap. So we are curious. why there is such a big gap between the operational range of the micropower sensors versus the communication range of the micropower sensors. It turns out this big gap exists even if we switch to other network stack. For example, Fleet published in MobiSys several years ago, and EPC Gen 2, which is a network stack running by the RFID system. Before we dive into this clustering, let's do some investigation of the energy harvesting system. First, let's look at the macro energy harvesting system. For example, solar farms or big solar panels. This macro system have very large actual capacitor to store the huge amount of energy it can harvest. And the charging and discharging usually take a long time scale. For example, 1 day for charging and 1 night for discharging. Micro energy harvesting system is very similar to the macro system, except they have only tiny energy harvester and tiny buffer. So the charging time is and discharging time is on a level of milliseconds. And they have minuscule of energy within the buffer. Okay, let's go back to the previous question. Why is the operational range of the backscatter is limited? Our key observation here is that if you run a network stack on top of the sensor, any task within the network stack should be able to fit into the single discharging cycle of the device. Otherwise, the task execution fails because of the energy outage of the device, and the network stack ceases to operate. Okay, let's look at one example. Let's look at the dewdrop network stack. The atomic unit of the dewdrop network stack is a packet transfer, which is associated with several handshake messages between the reader and the sensor. It turns out the network, the atomic units of the dewdrop network stack is too large to fit into a single discharging cycle. As a result, executing of the atomic unit fails, and the dewdrop network stack ceases to operate. So what's the insight we observed here? Because it's too large, right? So the key insight here is that we just have to drive down the sizes of the atomic units to the smallest to enable the micropower devices to operate in severe energy harvesting conditions. So instead of transmitting a whole packet within a single discharging cycle, we can just transmit one bit, because one bit is the smallest atomic unit within a network stack, right? Let's see what's the benefit. It turns out, oh, we solved the problem. If we transmit one bit each time within a single discharging cycle, the communication distance we achieved is 18 feet, very close to the 18.6 feet of the communication range, and much longer than the 3.6 feet of when we run the dewdrop network stack. So we solved the problem. It seems that, but the throughput suffers. We deployed the sensor 18 feet from the backscatter reader and do the bit-by-bit transfer. The throughput we achieved 80 bps. We moved the sensor closer to the 3.6 feet. The harvest power increases by several orders of magnitude. However, the throughput we achieved is only 100 bps. Well, it's negligible, right? The increase of the throughput. Why? It's intuitive, because every time we just transmit a very small atomic unit, and there are some overheads associated with this small bit-by-bit transfer, these overheads cue the throughput, right? So the key question we want to address in this paper is how to maximize the communication throughput of the backscatter system while still maintains the capability to operate the whole system in severe energy harvesting conditions. All right, so at the core of our design is a microframe controller. And in this design, we first look at which system parameters affect the communication throughput and the operational range of the micropower devices. And then we look at how to tune these parameters in real time. The first parameter we can tune is a voltage, right? Many mobile systems just measure the voltage and look at how much energy is left in your device. Maybe you can check your phone, right? Your phone will show the battery level of the device very clearly. However, measure the voltage on the micropower devices is really very expensive. The amount of power consumed by the one voltage measurement is equal to 27 bits of data transfer. It's too expensive. So we are thinking about other alternatives to measure the performance of the system. One group of parameters we come up is a sleep time, where the devices stay in the sleep mode, and the number of bits we should transfer during the discharging cycle. These two parameters are implicit parameters of the system. If you sleep longer, you buffer more energy. If you transmit more data, you deplete more energy. The crucial part is these two parameters can be measured very cheaply on real system because they are time domain parameter. So you can just run a timer on the micropower devices and count the numbers. So let's look at how to select the first parameter, sleep time. It seems that we should shoot a very long sleep time, right? With the longer sleep, you buffer more energy, and you can avoid the fails of the transmission. However, that's not true, because this figure shows the sleep time, the relationship between the sleep time and the energy harvesting rate. There is a one point which is optimal for energy harvesting rate, and if you sleep very long, because you will get close to zero energy harvesting rate. This curve looks like that's because of the capacitor charging equation that is shown here. So our goal is try to identify the optimal sleep time and use the sleep time to tune our system. So we use a gradient search-based algorithm. At each sleep time, we calculate the gradient of the energy harvesting rate, and if the gradient is positive, we increase the sleep time. If the gradient is negative, we reduce the sleep time. And finally, we'll reach one point where the sleep time, the gradient is close to zero, which is optimal sleep time. Now, let's look at the second parameter we should tune, the number of bits we should transfer within a single discharging cycle. All right, it seems there is an intuitive answer. We might only have to deplete all the energy we buffered and transmit as much as possible. Is this true? No. That's because we observe the surprising SNR degradation when more bits are transferred, as this figure shows. You can see that with the transfer proceeds, the SNR of the system degrades. And at the end of the transfer, the signal strength perceived by the system is very close to the noise level, which cause troubles for the decoding, and we observe a significant increase of the bit error rate. This is because of the shared RF power between the energy harvesting circuits and the backscatter communication circuits. When you transfer the data, the amount of energy within the buffer decreases because the matching circuit is tuned for maximizing the energy harvesting rate. As a result, more power is harvested and put into the buffer, and less power is reflected back to the reader. As a result, the reader perceives the decrease of the received signal strength. So the reader, based on the perceived SNR, it will tell the sensor how many bits you should transfer, even though the sensor have more energy to transfer even more data. And this can be done by shutting off the carrier wave from the reader to the sensor. Having discussed how to select the parameters for the optimized performance of the system, let's see how to run the auto-tuning process in real time on a backscatter communication system. First, let's look at the cases where a sensor is transmitting data to a backscatter reader. And we can run the auto-tuning process to select the sleep time and the number of bits we should transfer. And the sleep time is chosen based on the energy harvesting rate perceived by the sensor, and the number of bits are selected based on the SNR perceived by the reader. Okay, this link works pretty good. Let's look at the reverse link, where is the backscatter reader wants to send some data to the sensor. Can we run the same auto-tuning process we just described on the reader side? Is it possible? No. That's because the reader does not know how much energy is available within the sensor. If the reader wants to transmit 100 bytes data to the sensor, maybe the sensor just have available energy to receive 50 bytes of data. So how can we do it? How can we enable the auto-tuning process on this communication link? That's the crucial question we want to address. And our key observation here is that the two communication link where the reader transferred data to the sensor and the sensor transmitted data to the reader are somewhat independent in terms of their physical mechanism they used for generating the signal. For example, when the reader wants to transmit data to the sensor, it turns on and turns off the carrier to generate a high and low pulses that can be received by the sensor. When the sensor wants to transmit data to the reader, it tunes and detunes antenna to generate the fluctuation of the signal on the carrier wave that is generated by the reader. You see that these two communication links use totally different physical mechanism for generating the signal, right? So both links can happen at the same time, same band. That's a crucial observation we observe. So basically, when the sensor wants to sleep to buffer more energy, it can just send a stop signal directly, even though the reader is sending signal to the sensor. The stop signal will generate a fluctuation on the carrier wave, and you see that the variance of the stop signal is larger than the variance of the noise, but smaller compared to the variance of the reader's signal. As a result, even if the reader transmitted data to the sensor, it can still perceive the stop signal that it received by that is generated by the sensor itself. So, but remember here, the stop signal is within the same band and same time of the reader's transmission. This is feasible for the reader to detect this signal because the independency of these two communication links. All right. We have talked about how to run the auto-tuning process for when a single sensor communicates with a backscatter reader. So let's look at the cases where there are multiple sensors deployed in front of the reader and how to schedule the transmission from multiple sensors. Usually, the scheduling on the channel on the MAC layer is based on the packet level. The reader can tell the first guy to transmit the packet first and tell the second guy to transmit packet second. However, remember that our technique fragments the packet transfer into tiny microframes and inserts sleep gaps between frame transfer. So each packet transfer is just a sparse small microframes in the channel with very large sleep gap in the middle. If we interleave the sensors on the packet level, you can see that most of the time the channel is idle because it's just the device is in the sleep mode for harvesting energy, right? But the sleep time of the first guy can be used to schedule transmission of the second guy. So our key insight here is the interleaving should be done not on the packet level, should be done on the microframe level. We should interleave the microframes from multiple sensors to optimize the efficiency of the MAC layer channel. So the basic idea of the scheduling algorithm is the token bucket-based scheduling algorithm. The reader keeps tracking the sleep time and the microframe size of each sensor and fit into a token bucket scheduler. Because of the time limitations, we will not cover the details of the scheduling algorithm. Please refer to our papers. We implement our system on a software-defined radio, USRP, which acts as a backscatter reader, and on the UMass MU system, which acts as a micro-power sensors. We deploy 10 sensors in front of in a 10-meter by 20-meter room. First, let's look at the benefit in terms of the operational range. In this experiment, we adjust the RF power level from the 0.5 dBm to the 25.5 dBm, and we measure the maximal communication distance of these two network stack, The first network stack is the Dewdrop, and the second network stack is ours. And you can see that the Dewdrop network stack never operates beyond 8 feet. But by fragmenting the components, our network stack can operate until 21 feet, which is 3.5 times longer compared to the Dewdrop. So it's a significant increase in terms of operational range. And even though our system is optimized to try to push the operational range of the micro power sensors, by making every micro juice count in our system, we get a surprising benefit in terms of the communication throughput. Because we have different mechanisms for optimize the communication throughput, we want to look at the contribution from each of them. So we compare against the Dewdrop. Dewdrop is left corner baseline. By adjusting the number of bits based on the energy harvesting rate, and we get a super benefit of 4.2. By adjusting the number of bits you should transfer based on the perceived SNR at the reader side, you get another benefit of 1.2 times. And by trimming the overheads of the whole system, we get another 0.14 times increase in terms of throughput. The total throughput gain is 5.8, which is very significant. Now let's look at the benefit, the operational range and the throughput benefit when the reader wants to transmit data to the sensor. And we compare against the EPC Gen2 network stack in this example. And we found that the EPC Gen2 network stack ceases to operate at 3 feet. And our scheme keeps operating until 18 feet. So it's a 9 times increase in terms of the throughput, in terms of the operational range. And the average throughput we achieved is roughly 1.5 kbps. Remember that because of the time limitations, we don't cover the experiment results as we do the experiments with 10 sensors in front of the reader. And we also have lots of engineering tricks to trim the overheads associated with each microframe transfer. So you can refer to our paper for details of these two past evaluation. In conclusion, in summary, we presented a network stack, QuarkNet. It enables the network stack to seamlessly scale down to very severe energy harvesting conditions. Our key contribution here is that we provide a novel packet fragmentation abstraction that can fragment the packet into small microframes as small as several bits each microframe to enable the whole system to work in severe energy harvesting conditions. And we also adapt the sleep time and the number of bits you should transfer according to harvesting and the network conditions. Basically, we address the fundamental limitation of the backsetter, the communication range, and improve the, and surprisingly, we also improve the throughput. So we believe that the abstraction we proposed in this paper, task and packet fragmentation, will enable lots of new applications for the backsetter-based micropower devices. Thank you. I'm happy to take questions.
Ask a question. I'm Josh Smith, developed the WISP, which the Moo's version of that. What I was wondering is, have you had a chance yet to look at what happens when the data doesn't come through? So if you have to retransmit and so forth, have you studied how that interacts with your fragmentation scheme?
So let me repeat the question. The question is, does the data can be received correctly if the packet is fragmented? Right?
Well, how does whatever you do when there's data loss, how does that interact with the fragmentation scheme?
Basically, our fragmentation scheme tries to fragment any packet into small microframes. So, for example, here, we fragment the whole packet into several microframes. So, even if you have some CRC or the error correction code on the packet level, this error correction data here at the end of their packet will be fragmented into the microframes. So at the microframe level, we do not check the errors on the microframe, but on the packet level, we resample the whole packet and do the error correction.
So you're saying there's basically no cost to the micro fragmentation scheme. You can just layer that on top of whatever else you're doing for error correction and detection.
I would not like to say there is no cost, because you know, in order to decode a packet, there are some fixed structure, right? If you want to decode the microframe on the wireless channel, there are some fixed structure. For example, one of the structure is in the EPC Gen 2 network stack. You can see that's the data you want to transfer. But beyond the data, there are some associated infrastructure, some associated frame structure, for some pilot tongue and the preamble. These two guys are used to identify the beginning of the packet, and you need to perceive partial of the frame structure to enable the decoding, correct the decoding. So in our implementation, we preserve the preamble of the structure, because this one, if you do the correlation on the preamble, you can detect where the packet starts. But we remove the pilot tongue because of the specific reason EPC Gen 2 designed the pilot tongue.
Okay. All right.
I have a couple of questions. First, what is the capacitor size you use for the storage? And secondly, how do you implement the gradient algorithm that you propose? Did you use an ADC, or, I mean, how did you do on the prototype?
Yeah, that's a great question. For the first question, what's the capacitor size? We use the standard mu. So the standard mu capacitor size is 10 microfarad. Let me see, where is my... We use the standard mu, and the standard capacitor size is 10 microfarad. And for the second question, how to run the gradient-based search algorithm? That's a very good point, because we should be very, very careful to run the gradient search-based algorithm, because the computational overhead can be very high, right? So we don't use the ADC, remember. If you do the ADC, basically you want to measure the voltage of the within the energy buffer, and as I mentioned here is ADC means the analog to digital conversion to measure the voltage. Each ADC is negligible on the mobile phones, but it's very high cost on our platform, so we don't do ADC. We choose other parameters. We do the gradient search for the sleep time, which can be calculated based on the timer. Running a timer is much cheaper compared to run an ADC.
Okay, thank you.
All right, let's thank the speaker.